This is your tech news briefing for Thursday, August 6th. I'm Amanda Llewellyn for The Wall Street Journal. The 2020 election is less than 3 months away, and voting officials want to make sure that everything is secure, starting with the voting machines at the polls. And the companies that make those machines are calling on hackers for help. Our reporter Robert McMillan will join us to explain why after these headlines. Instagram has launched its answer to TikTok, the new short video feature Reels. The U.S. launch comes at a rocky time for TikTok, which has been facing regulatory scrutiny and a potential ban in the U.S. TikTok's CEO has called it a copycat product. Our reporter Jeff Horwitz says it's in line with how Facebook has dealt with competitors in the past.
The most kind of widely understood example of this for Facebook would be Stories, which were kind of lifted pretty directly from Snapchat. And for Facebook, this has been a very successful strategy. They've been pretty good at blunting competitors that are entering in by offering very similar services and simply making it convenient, functional, and all within the Facebook world that so many users are already on.
Speaking of Facebook, 20 Democratic state attorneys general wrote to the company on Wednesday. They say Facebook has been too slow to combat hate speech on the platform, and they offered some solutions. The AGs want the company to make it easier to access evidence of online crimes and offer real-time assistance for victims of hate speech. A spokesperson for Facebook had no immediate comment, but Facebook has repeatedly said it would do more to combat harmful speech, while also defending free expression. And Samsung unveiled a new line of devices on Wednesday, including a new version of its Galaxy Note phone. The Note 20 comes with a bigger screen, faster processing power, and next-generation 5G capabilities. And at $1,000, it's about $300 cheaper than the previous version. Samsung's not alone here. Smartphone makers have been adding 5G to cheaper models to try and get a broader swath of consumers to buy into the new technology. After the break, how hackers are helping keep election systems secure from hackers. That's next. Between a pandemic, your kids running around behind you, and the rest of the mess that is 2020, you might have forgotten there's an election coming up. We're less than 3 months out. A lot of people are planning to do mail-in voting this year, but polls will be open, and many of them will be filled with voting machines. The companies that make those machines want to make sure they're secure. Yesterday, one of the major players in voting machine tech gave hackers the go-ahead to try and find holes in its systems so they can be fixed before Election Day. We talked to him yesterday, and now our reporter Robert McMillan is back again to explain what's going on. Bob, thanks for coming back.
My pleasure, always.
Bob, I think a lot of people might be surprised that there's any relationship at all between these groups. So what's going on here? How does this kind of relationship normally work?
Well, with established tech companies, there's been a growing period, right? If you go back 20 years, Microsoft did not have a great relationship with hackers in the early days. Oracle did not have a good relationship with hackers in the early days. Neither did Cisco. There's sort of a life cycle that these relationships go through. And the first part of that is usually denial. The hackers are messing around with systems for fun quite often, or just because they're interested in them. They find problems, and the companies don't really have a big incentive at that point to acknowledge or to engage with them. And so they deny the problem. And what happens traditionally is that this denial phase moves into an acceptance phase after a bit of time, because some subset of these problems that are being discovered turn out to be real issues. And just because the well-intentioned ethical hackers are not exploiting them, that doesn't mean that nation states or criminals are going to not exploit them. And the companies find out that if they don't deal with these problems, they can't deny them, because if they don't deal with them, they're going to turn into real problems. So with the voting community, we're emerging out of the denial phase, right? So in the early days, these ethical hackers would look at voting systems and they would find problems. And the voting companies would typically downplay them. They would not work with the hackers. One person I interviewed for my article said that he didn't even report a flaw he found because he didn't really trust the vendor, ES&S, to handle it appropriately.
So with this company, Election Systems and Software, ES&S, how did we get from that denial phase to the acceptance phase? What changed?
Well, for ES&S, it started with an email address. A couple of years ago, if you found a problem with an ES&S system, there wasn't even a place you could go to report it. In 2018, ES&S had a brouhaha with hackers at the DEF CON hacking conference in Las Vegas, and neither side really looked good at the end of it. So I think there was an effort to kind of build bridges after that. So ES&S put a little email address on their website where if you found a problem, you could actually report it. This is something they didn't have before. And it's something that's kind of useful for hackers. The problem is that there's not much, until today, there hasn't been much other than that email address. So you could find a problem and send it to them, and you wouldn't really have any assurance, for example, that they weren't going to turn around and sue you. These are the kind of things that many tech companies already have. It's called a vulnerability disclosure policy. And they basically spell out on their websites what you can and what you can't do if you're doing research into their products. ES&S announced that on Wednesday. And so now it's gone from just having an email address to actually having a whole sort of set of rules of engagement around the hacker community. And that's a big step for the election security community.
So what do the rules of engagement look like now?
The rules of engagement now are pretty much what they are with other companies. However, there is one issue that remains, I think, and that is getting access to the systems. If you're doing research on the iPhone or on Windows, it's very easy to buy a Windows machine or an iPhone. But if you're doing research on a voting machine, they're actually pretty hard to get. And so the hackers would really like it if ES&S would provide them with systems, would show up at hackathons or places like the Voting Village and DEF CON and let them take a look at their products and find bugs, and they would report them and the products would get better. ES&S hasn't gone quite that far. You know, that's just something to keep an eye on, because if you can't get your hands on the systems, then it's harder to find the problems in them.
And ES&S is just one maker of voting machines, right? What are other companies doing?
Yeah, there are other voting machine makers. ES&S is the largest, but there's also Dominion and Hart. They are both following this path. They're coming up with vulnerability disclosure policies, and the industry is moving in this direction. The Department of Homeland Security is very interested in getting this. They've been working with the state and local officials to also have them have ways of engaging with this community and having policies. So if you want to look at the voting system in San Francisco or Los Angeles, there's a way to engage, you know, ethical hackers with doing that as well. So this was identified as sort of a systemic issue in this business. It's a very unusual business, right? Because it is, you know, as I said, it's not like Windows. It's not like Apple. It's like a small, you know, even though there are many, many jurisdictions that purchase these machines, there's actually a pretty small group of people that use them relative to other tech products. Often these machines are, you know, they're not even connected online. They're, you know, stored in warehouses. They come online just for, you know, an election day. They're not the same as a Windows computer. And so you have to have this balance between understanding how they're used and creating test scenarios that are really realistic. But also you want to encourage people to find problems and report them and get them fixed just to make the products more secure.
Yeah, and we should note here, in the past, ES&S and other election officials have sometimes defended that reluctance to work with outside security researchers, hackers. They've said they sometimes use unrealistic scenarios or publish hyped up claims for attention. Zooming out, I guess my big question is, why is this so important? Why does having a procedure for vulnerability disclosures matter so much?
If you look at the history of companies that make products and the hackers that find them, the companies that make products always underestimate the ability of the hackers that find the problems to find these problems. And so it's just, if you think about it, it's like if you have thousands of eyes looking at the problem, they're more likely to find issues, right? And there just has been this sense from the voting machine community that they have this, we don't need this outside expertise. It's not going to be that helpful. And it just time and time again, just with the issues that they found, some of them have been really obvious security problems that really should have been addressed. And keep in mind that these voting machine companies, they're not Microsoft. They're not Apple. They're small companies with just hundreds of employees instead of tens of thousands. And they're like a crucial part of our democracy. So they're building technology that, if compromised, could really undermine our confidence in the elections. And that's a really important thing. Having this kind of engagement brings us a step toward more secure elections. And after 2016, when we basically had Russian hackers poking at the election systems, and in some cases, even getting into networks, it's really important that we get this on the right track.
All right. Our reporter, Bob McMillan, thanks so much for coming back.
Great to be here.
That's it for today's tech news briefing. As always, we've got more tech stories on our website, WSJ.com, so check us out there. And if you like our show, please do rate and review us. It really does help. I'm Amanda Llewellyn for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.